When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
The most important thing is thinking about the child and the best interest of the child. We as parents really should be secondary if we're not doing this in a normal situation, but in the more common situation. And I think that that's what I've learned, you know, over the years of being in this field as well, is that the child is really the most important thing in this equation. Yeah. We really need to ensure that all the legal boundaries are put in place and all the legal obligations from all sides are, you know, clearly defined.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I am your host, but with gay. And this is the show that celebrates, uplifts, highlights, and normalizes LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful, beautiful identities. And of course, this episode does not disappoint on that front. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Damien. Damien is a gay father through surrogacy. He also happens to be a sperm donor to many and an embryo donor. So we are covering a lot of queer family building bases here in this here episode. And something I love about Damien's story is he had a really profound experience in the creation of his child and decided to create something out of it. And you know, I love a story like that. I love a story like that. And he started his own surrogacy agency called New Gen Families. So I am so excited for you to hear Damien's story and the origin of the agency he's created to help others create their families. It's just beautiful, full circle. I love it. But before I roll the tape, let me give you a little update on my own personal life. We are in the middle, towards the end, actually. Oh my God, towards the end of summer for the kiddos and for us. And we just finished our final vacation of the summer. That sounds so sad to me. Like there's no more vacations. Next thing is school starting. It's like, what? But we just came back from a trip to visit my family in San Francisco, and we had a really wonderful time there. We spent some time in rural California, kind of out by Yosemite, where my best friend now lives and owns a ranch. And I did my best to not talk politics because we cannot talk politics together. And I did a good job until the very end. There were Trump signs everywhere. I was like, what is happening to California? It's so hard and scary, but I did my very best to not talk politics, and I'm really proud of myself. So yay, give any of you who have to be with family members that you know you can't go there with and you make it through, good job. Give yourselves a pat on the back. And also give yourselves a pat on the back if you do it anyway, because also that takes guts, and good for you too. Because we're fighting the good fight over here. We're on the right side of history over here now. Come on. And we also actually were able to spread my dad's ashes, finally. My dad died 6 years ago, and my mother hasn't been ready to spread his ashes for the longest time. And finally she was ready. And my dad was a huge sea kayaker. He was an outdoorsman. He was an ocean man. And one of his kayaking buddies has a boat and took us out. And we went under the Bay Bridge and under the Golden Gate Bridge. And we went to one of his favorite spots out there. And a bunch of his kayak friends met us out there on their kayaks. It was really, really actually very touching. And my mom said this beautiful speech, and we spread the ashes, and we let flowers go, and it was beautiful closure. I'm gonna cry, but it was great. And my dad and I admired him and I loved him, but we didn't have the closest relationship. He was a good dad, but we weren't close. You know, I didn't cuddle with him like I cuddle with my mother, but there was a supreme admiration for each other on both of our sides. And it was a really good send off to a pretty spectacular man. So anyway, that's what I've been up to. And now I'm getting ready. It's time to gear up for school. Here we go. Back to school is about to happen. And my daughter is getting what I'm calling a Gen X summer break week, which means she gets to be a latchkey kid this week. She's old enough to be left alone at the house. She has no camp signed up this week. So my kid is a Gen Xer, a Gen X child for the week. She is just doing her own thing. And sometimes I feel guilty about that. And then sometimes I think, you know what? It's okay. She deserves to just sit around and do nothing. She can do that for this week at least. Give yourselves a break, parents, if you're out there trying to run yourselves ragged, bringing your kids to all the activities and making sure they have something to do at all times this summer. Sometimes they can just sit around and do what they want. Am I right? Can I get an amen? Anyway, I hope y'all are enjoying the ends of your summers. And I know some kids are like going back to school like next week, which is insane to me. We at least have about 3 more weeks to go. But you're all doing great. And I hope you're all having a wonderful, wonderful summer out there. And I can't wait for you to hear the entire season. And I can't wait for you to hear this episode right here with Damien. So without further ado, it is time to roll that tape. Helen, Beulah, they're still here with me. They're sitting out there with Rose watching crappy TV with their cocktails. I told them, don't give Rose a sip of your cocktail, Helen and Beulah. Don't do that. But Rose would never. But anyway, Helen, Beulah, and also Nicole and Gerson, my real assistants, please, would you please roll that tape? Enjoy, y'all.
Queer Family Podcast, Love is Love.
Hi, Damien.
Hey, how are you, Jamie?
I am excited to be chatting with you finally.
Amazing. I'm very excited too.
I'm very excited to talk about what we're about to talk about. And just to let the listeners know what we're about to talk about, I'm going to put you on the spot, my Ooh. Friend. And I'm going to have you give your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, everyone. My name is Damien Chambers. I am from Melbourne, Australia. I'm a gay dad through surrogacy. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a sperm donor. I'm building a little football team back in Australia. I'm also recently an embryo donor, and I'm the founder of NewGen Families Surrogacy Agency. And our agency, basically, we provide safe, supportive, and ethical surrogacy journeys for future parents, regardless of their race, their gender, and their sexual orientation. Boom, 30 Boom. Seconds.
Oh my God, you did it. Go yes. ahead,
Damien. I feel like I'm warming up for the Paris Olympics that starts on Friday.
Amazing. First of all, you cover a lot of bases here with surrogacy, sperm donation, and embryo. Yeah, obviously it's got to be an embryo, I would think. I don't think you, well, who knows? You could
well,
have
sometimes
your own
I feel like when I see a little baby, I feel like my ovaries are on fire because they're so cute, but you know, no, I don't have any eggs, unfortunately.
Let's take it down memory lane.
Okay.
Can we take it to before you were a parent and kind of the first time you started thinking about being a parent, knowing you're gay, and you know the whole thing, the thing we all go through. Let's go back.
Yeah, so I'm 51 now. I was 19 when I came out, and I think that was really one of the biggest issues that I faced when I came out was like, how am I going to start my family, because I'd always envisioned myself. I know I always had a great connection with kids and cousins and things. And I don't know, I was really lucky. I think within weeks of me coming out, I was walking down a street in my sort of local area and I saw this bookstore and it was called Hares and Hyenas and it had a rainbow flag on it. And I thought, oh, I'll go in. I've got goosebumps now when I tell this story because this is where it all started for me. And there was a book in the gay bookshop and it was called The Lesbian and Gay Parenting Handbook by April Martin. It was basically this incredible book that
I've never heard of this book.
Yeah. Oh my God. You have to get it. Honestly, it is. I mean, look, this is what inspired me. This is 30 years ago. And it was talking about all the co-parenting cases in America of gay men and lesbians basically coming together under like together on the side and creating all of these families. So it was already happening in the 90s. And that was that was enough for me to read and say, oh, okay, I'm clearly not ready now to start a family, but there is a way. And I think pretty much from there, I just kept following how rainbow families were being created. And, you know, this is long before Facebook or any, there was any online or social media. That's sort of how that started. And then I think when I started hearing about surrogacy, that's what really planted the seed for me was, you know, I was obviously eventually when I was ready to start my family, was going to go down the path of surrogacy.
You never toyed with the idea of getting one of your lesbian friends and
We're going to go there. Let's go there. Okay. So as you know, we've had a bit of a chat beforehand. You know, both you and I have a singing background as well. We're singers.
Yeah, we do.
I was a professional musical theater performer for about 15 years. Yes, I did many
this
shows.
This is why I'm thinking of my college days. I think you just remind me so much of like, there's an energy here I'm feeling. Okay,
I love it. I love it. Yeah. So I was very lucky, you know, dancer, singer, dream to perform the musical Cats. So I was a cat for 3 years, 8 shows a week in the Broadway musical Cats, not on Broadway, but doing European tours. This is when social media just started. And I found this online group in Australia called Maybe Baby. And it was amazing. It was majority sort of lesbian couples or single lesbian females that were looking for sperm donors. And so I kind of uploaded my profile and within 24 hours, my inbox was full and I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on here? So I went down the path. I looked at all these different profiles and I found one beautiful woman who was single at the time. And I thought, okay, let's reach out to her and just sort of start this. I'd never ventured into this, but I knew I wanted to be a dad. Her profile was amazing. And so we started connecting and talking. And as I was living in Europe, so I was living in Germany and Switzerland at the time. And then we just had this great relationship, email relationship. And then we planned on me when I was coming back to Australia for a holiday to meet up and just see where we could go with this. And, you know, full transparency, I felt really terrible because it just wasn't for me. I met her and I thought it was wonderful, but there was just something in my mind that was saying no. And like we'd already invested probably a good year in our relationship. And in the end, when she was sort of putting that the hard word on me, are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? I kind of backed out. Everything on paper was good, but I just, there was something saying this isn't right. And I think it was because I didn't want to co-parent. I think instinctively, I couldn't imagine myself not having full custody or full time with raising my child. So while she was disappointed, and we still have a relationship now and she's got two beautiful kids and is married with a beautiful woman. And back then it was definitely something that I was considering.
And when was that? What year was that?
15, 20 years ago. So I mean, it was definitely, I can tell you it was 2004 because I can still, I don't know what you're like, but I think of my gigs that I did and the musicals that I did. And that's the timeline of my life pretty much from my early 20s up until my mid 30s of whatever show I was doing, wherever I was in the world. So around 2004 that was. So just a couple of years, I think Facebook and all these social media platforms started in, I think, 2007. So it was only a few years before that.
So the two of you were gonna... Were we doing like a deposit or were we doing
doing traditional baby dance?
Turkey. Okay. Just like you never know.
I was young and naive. Let's just say that. And I would not advise that. We didn't even talk about legal things. There was, you know, that we hadn't even entered those conversations at that stage. Now with what I know, which we can talk about later, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a complicated route. It's going to come with some bumps, but all of our routes, as you know, come with their bumps. But if we can make it as legally buttoned up as possible, I think it's the best way to be.
Oh, 100%. I think it's really hard to, when you're not a parent, the most important thing is thinking about the child and the best interest of the child. We as parents really should be secondary if we're not doing this in a normal situation, but in the more common situation. And I think that that's what I've learned, you know, over the years of being in this field as well, is that the child is really the most important thing in this equation. Yeah. We really need to ensure that all the legal boundaries are put in place and all the legal obligations from all sides are, you know, clearly defined and entered into before we do turkey basters at home. And
think about the kid first, and then we'll put our puzzle pieces together because it's a puzzle. Okay, so you thought that would work, and then you trusted your gut, which I tell people all the time: just trust your gut. You're gonna know, right? So you trusted your gut, and then what happened?
I kind of gave up for a while and just focused on my career. Spent another probably 4 years in Europe, touring and doing shows. And then I came home. I moved, I was 12 years in Germany, Switzerland, Austria. And then I moved home in, I think, 2008. And then I was like, what am I going to do with my life? Mm-hmm. I just had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And at this point as well, like I had learned about surrogacy. And really at that point around 2008, I believe that Thailand and India were really thriving surrogacy destinations as a much cheaper alternative to the USA. I'd sort of looked into that, but at the same time, I was transitioning into a new career. So I really had put my parenting plans on hold. Also, I was single, so there was no rush for me.
Yeah. Also, it's a really expensive route. Well, even if you go to Thailand, you're going to need some money.
Exactly. You know. I mean, then I stayed home, changed careers. Stayed in the entertainment industry, set up a last-minute ticketing company similar to TKTS in New York. And I think that that was the drive. Then I was like, okay, this is it now. I'm in a position where the business was doing well. You need to think. I was single and I thought, well, there's plenty of single people doing surrogacy or starting families. And so I went down the India route first because there was a lot of Australians doing surrogacy in India. I went down that route to do sort of some research and then – I mean, all of a sudden, literally overnight, they closed surrogacy for, I think initially it was for like the LGBTQ plus community, our rainbow community. And then it was just to foreigners like altogether. So they stopped that. And I think every time you invest in this, because it is an emotional investment when you're trying to figure out how on earth can you become a parent, you need a bit of a break. When you hit a roadblock, you need a break. So I took a break. Right. And then started up again, then Thailand. And lo and behold, exactly the same thing happened in Thailand. Now, look, there were some really scary stories coming out of India and Thailand when those destinations closed their doors to foreigners. I was very lucky in the sense that I hadn't paid any deposits. I was only in my research phase, but nonetheless, it was still disappointing. And then the same thing transpired in Thailand, what happened in India. So they had a military coup, I believe, and then literally overnight, it was once again closed down for foreigners. And that was at the point where I thought, hang on a minute, this is it meant to be? Do you know what I mean? Like I'm constantly with these, this is the third time now. And so then once again, I took a break and I thought I'd research Mexico. There was something about Mexico that there was just, I just didn't want to go down that route. And so I just set my mind and I manifested. I was like, if you're going to do this, you have to do it in America. It's expensive. And I don't have that kind of money. I don't come from money. I don't have family that can help me. And so I don't know. I just think that that was my driving force in life. And I probably spent the next 4 or 5 years just making sure that this business was going to be sort of the pathway for me to be able to afford surrogacy in the USA. Because it, unfortunately, it's not one of the, it's not a pay-as-you-go model. You need the money upfront. And so, so that's what I did. I worked my butt off and I was in a very fortunate place where one of my competitors, I'd say I was probably number two in our industry, and the number one company that sort of had a really big chunk of the market share called one day and made me an offer. And I thought, oh, this is it. And as soon as, it was incredible. And I thought, oh my goodness, in one foul swoop, I didn't have to, I mean, I was saving, but was not really anywhere near my target. And then all of a sudden overnight, they said, we want to buy you out. And I was like, boom, let's do this. And I just remember tears of joy because the first thing that I did was like, as soon as they transferred the money after the sale, boom, it was like I contacted the agency, the surrogacy agency that I'd been in contact with. I was like, I'm starting, like now, let's do it now. So
does Australia not have or did they not have like surrogacy agencies in Australia?
Surrogacy, like in Australia, it's pretty terrible. So we have altruistic surrogacy in Australia where the surrogate cannot be compensated. Oh. It's for some people, it's not for others. It's really disappointing in Australia that there are so many, you know, straight couples, gay couples, single people that really need and depend on surrogacy as a way to grow their family. But there's just such an imbalance of power there. There's not many surrogates in Australia that are going to do it for altruistic, do altruistic surrogacy. And therefore you have thousands and thousands of people on these Facebook groups just trying to find. And I think there's a myth with altruistic surrogacy that it doesn't cost anything. It absolutely does. You know, it's just the surrogate can't be compensated. You still have to pay for all of the IVF and the medical and the legal and the psychological and all of that. And so it does add up, you know, you can spend between 80 to 100,000 Australian dollars, which is maybe, you know, say 45,000-50,000 US dollars, which is sort of 70,000 US dollars for a journey. So it's still not cheap.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't that wasn't for me. I put myself in the Facebook groups a couple of times and I thought, I don't want to feel like I'm selling myself. I don't want to feel like I'm competing with other people. I want to do an independent journey and I think surrogates, of course, should be rewarded and financially compensated. They're risking their lives. And the second thing with surrogacy in Australia, unfortunately, in two states and one territory, we have a horrible law that basically states that any residents from those states, if they even enter into an international commercial surrogacy arrangement, it carries, I think, a 3-year minimum imprisonment term and quite a hefty fine as well. Look, there's no case law. But it scares people, just the fact that that law is there. It's like being gay. I mean, in Tasmania, in Australia, a state, it was still illegal to be gay in the 90s. So when I came out.
Oh, shit.
You know, so we have a fair way to go to catch up, you know. And so there are advocacy groups now that are trying to at least just abolish that law.
But you know, this the whole world, we got a long way to go, but we're chipping away one story at a time here.
A long way to go, but I try and teach the youth that I talk to, yes, we have a long way to go, but my goodness, how amazing is it right now today to be part of this beautiful community. And I try and say that with love, with some, and I've got my goddaughters are very pro-LGBT and fighting the fight for me. And I said, look, as long as you're doing it with love, just continue to do it with love. That's the only way you're going to get a message across. Do you know what I mean? And like when I came out, it was the, you know, HIV AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. We couldn't really have children. There was no clear pathway to children and we couldn't get married. So for me, I try and remind everybody that yes, we have a long way to go, but my goodness, how amazing I feel that it is so wonderful today to be a gay man that has a child, and then maybe my Prince Charming will come along one day and I can get married. But, you know, it is, and we have to celebrate those wins, I think, and be really conscious of those.
That's true, Damien. That's a really good point. Yeah, we have come a long way. We really have. And we are so much luckier than those in the 60s and the 70s or the 50s or the 40s or the 30s or the 20s, you know. So you call the agency, you're going with it in the States. What happens? Let's talk about it.
At the time, I was dating an Israeli guy. We'd been together for 6 or 7 years. And on the second date, I said, you know, look, I'm already had researched with my India and Thailand, and this is the pathway I'm going. And he was like, look, just not interested in having kids. And I was like, damn. And I think that I'm glad in that moment I didn't walk away because fast forward when I pulled the plug and sold my company, I said, I'm doing this. How do you feel? He was like, cool, let's just trial it. Let's just see how it goes. And long story short, we were in Israel when it was time to select an egg donor on a holiday. We were at a restaurant and this beautiful woman approaches and says, oh my goodness, Gilad, that's my ex, and he's like, Timor. And I said in that moment, I was like, when she walked away, I was like, that's our egg donor. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm not vibing with the catalogs and the egg donor databases. There was absolutely a disconnect from that process. I probably had 25 on my spreadsheet and I had no idea. Like, how do you choose the other half? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Likewise, with lesbian couple, how do you choose a sperm donor? How do you choose an egg donor?
I call this the search for the superhuman because many of us, not all of us, some of us make a decision like that. It's nothing, piece of cake, boom, boom, boom. I picked it. Yo. Many of us, though, get cuckoo, ka-choo. Like, we get crazy. I got insane.
I would have been cuckoo, ka-choo, too.
it's like you're in a department store and there's all these choices or not enough choices. And now how do we choose between these two that we don't really even care about? You know what I mean? Like it's, you get crazy. You do get really crazy. So you saw her in
person. I saw her and to paint a picture, she looks like Angelina Jolie with these big green eyes.
I would have chosen her too.
Yeah. So I just said to, I asked my ex permission. I said, do you mind if I ask her? He was like, no, go ahead, whatever. So she came back and I just said, look, we're starting a family and we're lost for egg donors. And I was like, I don't know. I just feel this vibe right now. I mean, when I say this out loud, no, can I have your eggs, please?
Did you do it right there, then and there? Walked over.
And she was like, oh my God. She was managing the place. She said, look, I've got to close up. Do you guys want to hang out? Just wait until I finish my shift and we can go for a drive and we can talk. And I was like, yeah, sure. So we did that. We waited for her. We went for a drive and she said, look, I would love to do this, but I have to ask my family. And mm-hmm. she said, I just can't commit to this, of course. But she said, this is, it's a mitzvot, giving back for her. And she was feeling at the time, she said, I just feel like I haven't been giving back. And that's part of, the Jewish faith to give back. And so she called her parents and they said, come over for dinner tomorrow night and we'd like to meet you. And so we went over the next day and I'm an animal lover. Like I just grew up with animals. We work volunteer at the Animal Aid in Australia and we had all these strays we would take the strays in the day before they were due to be put down. So I've just grown up with animals. And so we were, in Eilat, which is the south of Israel, very desert. And, it's one of those places where there's lots of stray cats around and dogs just walking around. And so we opened the gate of Timor, my egg donor's family home, and all of a sudden, like, I kid you not, like seven dogs just came running towards me. I got on the ground on their level instinctively and just started playing with them all. And Timor's mother said that it was a yes from that moment. She said that she had made up her mind because other people are not so accommodating to the dogs of the house, whereas I just naturally went on the floor and started hanging out with them. So we had a beautiful dinner and they gave their blessing. And that was sort of how I found my beautiful egg donor. And now they're part of the family.
That was what I was going to ask. When, did you have a plan for how it was all going to play out when you asked her? Like, did you already know that you either wanted the egg donor involved or you didn't want what did you talk about it then?
I basically said to the family, I'm an open book. I'm a very unique personality and a human being. I think spiritually evolved. And I said, look, the only thing I can say is that I would love my son because, I mean, we'll talk about that later, gender selection, whatever. I knew I was going to have a boy. Mm-hmm. I was like, I would love my son to just know the egg donor, know the surrogate and just that would be the dream situation for me. And, we're strangers, really. We've just met. And so this has to happen organically. But I promise you it is my intention to keep you guys informed, updated. And however you want this to play out is completely up to you. And we can't force anything. But, I traveled. I was at the time, we'd been traveling at least once a year to Israel. And so that's sort of how it transpired. And I think that starting the process, that's what really consolidated the relationship because I just kept everybody involved and they were excited. Mm-hmm. I had already donated my sperm in Australia. I'd already had, I have a few lesbian friends in Australia.
Hold on. And backtrack.
Backtrack.
Go ahead. You're telling it. Tell the story. What?
I'd already donated to some friends and
as you do,
as you do. And there was a bit of counseling that was involved in that. And so I think that because I'd already had the counseling for that journey, I had the tools to sort of, just relay the message to the family in Israel and say, hey, terminology is really important in this business that we do. And of course, Timor's not the mother. So we can call her Titi, we can call her whatever, but it's okay for the outside family to be given their titles. So I said, if you're comfortable, I would still like my son to refer you to as grandma, grandpa, uncle, auntie, and all of the other family members involved, if that's okay with you. And they were absolutely comfortable with that. So,
okay. So I have a question regarding making sure, legal stuff.
Yeah.
But also I want to backtrack to the sperm donor thing because, okay, so you donated for a lesbian couple.
Yep.
Are you involved in that child's life or what was the situation with that and what is it like and all the things?
Yeah. So, I mean, I donated to them, then I had my child and then I donated to other friends and I'm a donor for three lesbian couples and we call them dibblings. So they're donor siblings of my son. So we call it the dibbling. We've got a WhatsApp group and a Facebook group. And so I'm in contact with all of them. I think for me, known donation is important. Mm-hmm. It's not for everybody. But for me, it was really important. I didn't want to just put my sperm on a sperm bank and help families that way anonymously. I really wanted to not be involved. But for me, once again, it was about the child. If I could donate to these friends of mine, we'll be in their life. It'll be organic. Nothing's changed except they're growing their family. And I was able to help with that. And so, I'm totally involved. We meet up. They're in Australia. So they meet up. Yeah. The Dibblings all meet up. And I meet them every year I go home. So I go home for December, January over the Christmas period and we meet up. And it's incredible because every year we do the photograph with me on my own with the kids and then the families together. And it's really beautiful. And I think that what I've learned from my personal surrogacy journey, I don't feel in my lifetime I can ever repay my surrogate or my egg donor.
Right.
They're just such incredible human beings and what they have to go through. I'm sorry, but and sorry for any sperm donors out there, that we don't really have to do much. Do you know what I mean? It's not much, but to donate your eggs and
it's
to be a surrogate.
Fun. I don't know. Like it can be fun for you even. Yeah. Like it's like,
yeah, but yeah. I don't know. I just feel this deep desire to pay back. And I think that that's why, for me, it was nothing. I've helped my friends out, but I'll never forget that kind of generosity that these two incredible, powerful women have given me. I mean, and you'll relate to that. It's
amazing.
It's my purpose in life. They've given me literally life. I'm always conscious of that. And I recently donated my embryo. That's another story for you. I had embryos and I've been paying, I think, $700 or $800 a year on storage.
And I
knew I was one and done. And I had a male and a female embryo. Had a friend in Australia that was really struggling with fertility for a decade, I think, 46 years old. How do you offer someone like that? Do you know what I mean? There's this, and I said, I just said, look, I'm not getting weird on you. Please don't be weirded out by this. But I was like, I've got a male and a female embryo in LA, literally sitting there. My son Nathaniel, his full siblings. And I said, I think I'm at the point where I'm either going to donate them to science or find a family that is interested in me donating to them. Would you do you want my embryos? And she was like, oh my God, yes, please. And so she flew to LA, when was it, last year? Well, she's basically due in a few weeks. So
oh my God.
I'm so happy because I really wanted a daughter. I always wanted a little princess daughter. And so she, at the last, can you imagine?
She might be a bruiser too. You never know.
She wanted a boy. And then as literally the day of the transfer, she said to the doctor in LA, she said, I've changed my mind. I want a little girl. Can we transfer the girl? And so I was so happy. And she's now ready to deliver in the next 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be, this is a weird one too, because it's funny with sperm donation, I just felt I was helping, but it's a different concept mentally that this is my son's full sibling and the daughter that I always wanted in a sense. So I don't know. I feel it's a very different situation and I'm over the moon. I'm excited.
And your friend is single or
She's
is
single.
There a?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. Interesting.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Y'all, I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam. Queer Fam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feathersnack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feathersnap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or if you're like us living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high resolution camera that connects to an app so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feathersnap feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Queer Family Podcast.
Yeah, I always wonder about the tie. I feel like personally, I don't think I could donate my eggs. I think that I would always feel like I had children out there and I would want to meet them. It's important to be honest with ourselves and know.
100%.
I don't think I could handle it. I think I would always wonder about that kid or those kids or, you know, and so that's why it is so important that we have all these different personalities and the things that.
It's weird because when I mean, of course I asked some of my friends, I hit them up and some were like, oh my God, I could be your surrogate, but I couldn't be your egg donor. And then others were like, oh my God, I can give you my eggs, but there's no way I could carry the child and then give it to you. So you're right. It's a very case by case individual and really super personal and sensitive opinion or choice.
And Damien, full disclosure, I couldn't be a surrogate either. No, thanks. So, I'm not being, pregnancy wasn't for me either. So I'm not paying it forward that way. I'll just keep telling the stories. But so with all of these, with the sperm donation, with the egg donation, with your egg donor, I am imagining you had legal documents drawn up. You had it all figured out ahead of time. Can you, just in case, you know, there's someone who's thinking of asking their best friend to be their sperm donor. When you went about that, how did you work on getting, because you weren't working with an agency at this point. So how'd you work about getting the legalese taken care of?
We just basically went through the clinic. You go through an IVF clinic and all of the consent forms and all of the legal documentation is done there. So I didn't have a separate attorney. It was in-house at the clinic that basically it's all consent forms. And, you know, and as I said to you before, Australia's really big on mental health in the IVF space and the donation space. And so we had to have individual counseling and then group counseling, which was amazing. And, you know, throughout that process, it was basically all the legal documents were drafted there so that it was 100% clear. And in Victoria, in Australia, I can only donate to 10 families. So there is a maximum. So they do keep track.
That's good.
Of, you know, the amount of families that you're donating to. So everything is above board. It's all legally documented.
And, you know, for anybody who wants to, you know, try to do it at home, if you got to save money, if you don't have the money, like, you know, just make sure that you figure out a way to find that legal.
Absolutely. I would 100% say that. It's probably the first thing that you should do. You should basically enter into that agreement. And I think what's really important, you have to be honest with yourself. And exactly, you know, going back to that initial story, there was something that wasn't right with me entering into a co-parenting arrangement. I just knew. And I think that that is probably one of the biggest mistakes that are made between, you know, humans that come together to sort of co-parent or do that is that, you know, you've got to be okay with that. and envisioned that if there is, you know, sort of legal terms and conditions that state that 1 week here, 1 week there, you have to really be okay with that and make sure that you've got everything in writing, everything legal contracts, because I'm sure that you've seen, I'm sure it happens here in America. I've seen things go pear-shaped in Australia. And I'm like, if you had have only done this the proper way, you know?
That's the hard truth when it comes to legitimate family building. Things can go wrong in many instances because there are so many variables in all of our family building situations. I just want to know one more thing about your surrogacy process before we get into what you ended up creating because of it. We didn't talk about your surrogate. So you got your egg donor, you went through an agency.
Yeah.
And they helped you find the surrogate, I'm assuming. And how did that go down?
It was just so much to unpack. You know, when you're researching surrogacy, there's just so much to, you know, and you know, we're living in a digital age where there's so much misinformation. So how on earth do you make a decision? And for me, you know, to be brutally honest, I made the decision to go with the biggest company in America, the one that had been around the longest, you know, SEO, they, for all their organic searches on any of the keywords that I was searching in, they just kept popping up. And so for me, that was just, I think because I didn't want to research it anymore. I was, you know, 44 at the time, I think. And so I was like, damn, I need to do this now. So it was just much easier for me because they were offering an incredible service where they, you know, there's an attorney, they linked me with a clinic. They just basically managed everything. And the agency was responsible for matching me with a surrogate. And at that time, I mean, I did my journey in a really good time. It was pre-COVID. There weren't these mega waiting lists to be matched with surrogates. I was just very fortunate that I was actually in Bali with my family, not even expecting it. And they sent an email saying, we've got a surrogate for you. And I freaked. I was like, you're kidding me. And so that was probably when it became all real. And so they sent me through a profile and then they sent the surrogate my profile. We then had a match meeting. And, you know, it's quite strange because you have to make up your mind within 24 hours. You have to give a yes, you know, and that was it. So I just took a leap of faith and, you know, we vibed on the first match meeting. And yeah, I mean, the rest is really history. And fast forward, she now works for me at New Gen Families, which is amazing.
Boom.
So yeah, real family there situation. Yeah.
I love that. Full circle. I love it.
Yeah.
So all in from the moment you said, I'm going with this agency, like let's say from the moment you signed the papers at the agency, whatever, to having baby in hand, how long was it?
I was lucky. Mine was 15 months, which is not normal.
Right.
Really, really quickly from the moment I signed, because from the moment I signed, then I basically got on a plane straight away to do my bits in LA. And we flew to more from Israel over to create the embryos. And as I said, before I even had the embryos, I was lucky I got sent a profile. So by the time that the embryos were created, we were going through all the legal processes. And, you know, pretty much as soon as the legal process was done, we were ready for transfer. And, you know, it would have been quicker, but my surrogate had an IUD and she needed a couple of cycles after they removed the IUD before she could transfer. So, I mean, it could have even been quicker had she not have had the IUD. But anyone out there, this is not the standard timeframe. We'd probably say 15 to 18 months to 2 years for a full surrogacy journey.
Or it could take even longer. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But it is so nice to hear sometimes that it happened quickly and easily. Usually not the case when it comes to all of the variables that we talk about. But that's amazing. Love it. So you get your beautiful baby boy. Life is great. And then you're like, you know what? I need to start another business.
Yes. Well, and that was the thing because I was, you know, I was lucky. I'd sold a business. I didn't need to dive into work. But I connected so much with my journey. I had an amazing, I did my journey with Circle Surrogacy and it was just such a positive, incredible experience. And I think that when you go into this, you don't understand how all of, I mean, it's a team effort. You've got attorneys, you've got embryologists, you've got the clinic, you've got everybody, you've got the mental health department and then the agency and all the departments. And I just, everyone was genuinely passionate about helping people have families. And that was something that I think resonated with me, knowing that I wanted kids from such a young age. I mean, I think he was sick. I think he was probably not even a week old. I was still in America and I was like, I think I want to work in this space. So I sent an email to the agency and then to a few other agencies in America and was like, hey, I really want to work in this space. I've just had my baby and I love it. And I had a couple of offers from a few different agencies. And then I decided to work for an Israeli, there was an Israeli agency. And because of my connection with Israel, I thought, let's just go for the Israeli company. And so in my mind, I don't know, when you've been a boss as an entrepreneur, you know, mm-hmm. it was challenging because I thought, well, hang on a minute. I know how to run businesses and I know how to run them well. So I had to bite mm-hmm. my tongue a few times. And I think that in that moment, I thought, wow, I had never really understood the concept of being overqualified for something. But I think in this case, I was completely overqualified to just be a case manager. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so I started thinking, you need to open up your own agency.
Interesting. We're like, Damien, we're like same, but totally different in the fact that our experiences determined our path. Like, however, mine is like the exact opposite. I had an awful, awful experience trying to get pregnant. It took forever. I hated everything because it was hard. And that's why this podcast exists, because I was feeling alone and I wanted to hear other stories like mine.
Isn't that amazing when you say that alone? Like, I couldn't believe how lonely I felt. I kind of was expecting to be matched with not just a surrogate and the whole process, but potentially other clients back home. And that's that's incredible that you said that, because that loneliness is what I wanted to change. And so when I thought about creating this company and this agency, initially it was to help my fellow Australians. Because of the harsh legislation there, you know, there was no Australian that had moved to America to focus on providing surrogacy solutions for those back home. My sort of pitch to my clients is that I've done my due diligence here. I know, in my opinion, who the best clinics are and who the best attorneys are and the most ethical egg donor banks and things like that. So, yeah, it's funny because that loneliness is key. It really was.
Yeah, and then it takes you on this path. And now I'm like, you know, but the big difference between you and I, the biggest difference is you were overqualified and I was extremely underqualified to do any of it. I'm still learning as I go. So 100%. that's where we really differ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But like meant to be. And I love highlighting these kinds of stories. I absolutely love it because there's really something special about that. It was meant to be. So you started your own surrogacy agency.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of years into my contract with the other agency, I don't know, it was a no-brainer. And then, of course, it was COVID. I mean, of course, what do you do when COVID hits? You start an agency and move across, you know, the other side of the world. So, yeah, totally. But I think that I had identified a few gaps in the market, and I thought, after doing all of my due diligence and research, I thought, yeah, there's definitely space. I think agencies that have started, we did a raise. So I raised a bit of money that would afford me to start with a team, start with some cash behind me and enter the space with a bit of a bang. There's let's call it a bit of a scene in the surrogacy space, you know, where there's lots of, you know, clinics and the same people, basically. We have, as an agency, unlike doctors and attorneys who, you know, pledge an oath to be ethical and maintain really, you know, sort of high standards, we're not bound by anything as an agency. There's no regulation for us. So what there is here, it's called SEEDS, an organization. It's the Society for Ethics in Egg Donation and Surrogacy. And so by being a part of that and a member of that, we are bound to certain standards, which I think is wonderful. And so we're proud members of SEEDS. Every so often, you know, occasionally a couple of times a year, they'll introduce a new standard. And there's two conferences that we attend every year. And that was good because it keeps you, I think, in check. Because, as I said, when you're working in an unregulated industry, I mean, I think it's incredible how you can have some agencies charge this amount and the others charge that amount. And now I understand it. Like in the beginning, I was sort of navigating my way through the space thinking, oh, it would be much easier if it's regulated. But now I really have a full understanding of why. And, you know, there is clinics in some more expensive states that might charge $20,000 more for exactly the same service. So that's why I think it's is very challenging today for people to go online. And wherever they end up, because there's literally hundreds of agencies, hundreds of clinics, you know, hundreds of attorneys. And so how do you choose that?
Yeah. So how do you choose that, Damien? Like how, like in your opinion or in your expert knowledge, what would be the reason for someone to come to your agency? And what are the things that we should be looking for and the intricacies of, because it is, it's huge. There's so many decisions mega. And there are so many out there.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to figure out which path to hone in on or what decisions to hone in on and things.
Trust is everything in this space. Mm-hmm. There's not much that you can control. You can control your egg donor selection. You can, you know, control saying yes or no to any profiles for surrogates that are being presented. But beyond that, it really is just you're trusting. You're trusting in so many people to, you know, and of course your surrogate in the end to keep your baby safe for the 40 mm-hmm. weeks. And so I think it's connecting with that agency who you have that consultation with. There has to be a connection because we're all going to pitch the same thing. You know, we have like right now in America, there is a shortage of surrogates and there are some agencies that have quite considerable lengthy waiting lists. Mm-hmm. And so for us, that was our focus. When we started this company, we really wanted to pull all of our resources into sourcing surrogates because ultimately, I mean, for lack of a better word, that's our currency. It doesn't matter how many intended parents or families that we have on a waiting list. Really, our business is only as many matches that we can do in a month. And so what mm-hmm. we've set out from the onset is to make sure that we don't have a waiting list. You know, when you sign with us, we can match you within 90 days. We have 100% success rate of matching within 90 days, which is quite extraordinary in this space. And also, I think the second thing is, you know, it's a controversial topic that there are agencies out there that take fees up front and place these intended, you know, future parents on significant waiting lists. And right. I don't want to enter into that debate. I just want to focus on what we do. We actually don't do that. We don't take any money up front. So the first payment milestone with us is only due when we've matched you with a surrogate. And so for us, there are, USPs. I mean, can we use that in the surrogacy space? I don't want to really say that, but you know, the benefits, exactly what you said before, you know, the benefits of signing on with us is that we can match you pretty quickly. And mm-hmm. also we just don't take any money up front. And we have really clear and concise refund policies as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but yeah, it's a very, very competitive industry.
It is. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. So, you know, it's good that we tell these stories and get the word out about what exactly is surrogacy. So tell everybody where they can find you and your and the agency and what they should do if they're really thinking about this path and possibly using your agency.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're based in Las Vegas and California. So we have staff all over California. I mean, look, these days, everything is virtual and online. But I think that starting to, you know, if you were to meet with us first, there's six key services in surrogacy. And so as an agency, if you come to us first before going to any of the other key services, we can really kind of educate you on those services. And so that's mm-hmm. what we do. So you've got one, you've got the agency. Number two, you have the clinic. Number three, you have the attorneys. Number four, you have escrow and trust, like financial management. Number five, mm-hmm. you have insurances, so many insurances in the surrogacy space. And the final one, which I'm really excited about, is mental health. It really, this was a new SEEDS standard that's been introduced this year. And when it came across my desk, I was so excited because I've already been through this so often in Australia with all of the preparation for the donations that I was making. And so we have partnered with a company called Embra Health. Really amazing mental health sort of, they provide mental health services in the surrogacy space and egg donation space. And so, yeah, so that's the sixth service because you need to have an individual session as parents and then a joint session once you've been matched with your surrogate. And of course, our surrogates are all psychologically screened. So mm-hmm. yeah, but I think the fact that we're in Vegas or California doesn't mean that if you're an American and you're outside of those states that you shouldn't sign with us or sign with an agency. As I said before, this is a remote industry. Most agencies' employees work remotely. I would prefer, to be honest, to have the best person for the job in the whole country, right, as opposed to the best people for the job just in Nevada or just in California.
Yeah.
And so that allows us to, recruit exceptional staff.
That's great. And your surrogates, are they all in California or Nevada, or do you have them
spread out to where we have, you know, what we call surrogate-friendly states? Mm-hmm. We have in America, which is amazing, which they call pre-birth orders. So before the baby's even born, there are so many surrogate-friendly states that around about sort of the, you know, after the first trimester, we're already starting the legal process to establish parental rights for the parents before they're born, which is extraordinary because every other place in the world, like Australia, it's a post-birth order state. And I think that the concept is that you can't legislate for something that doesn't exist.
Right.
So
right.
That's why there's post-birth orders, I think. And so it's kind of concerning because if you're entering into these arrangements, I don't know, I think that everywhere should be a pre-birth alter state. And, you know, look, yeah. I don't know. It's not that there's case law, but our surrogates don't want to keep the babies. They really don't.
No.
Yeah.
No.
They're like, we're done. Thank you. Here's your baby.
I don't know if you can get pre-birth orders like for like lesbian, like, you know, we had to do second parent adoption. Can you do
absolutely
that now?
Yeah.
You can? Is that a new thing?
It's not new. No, it's definitely been around since I've been, you know, since my son was born, because my son actually was born in Arizona, which is a post-birth order state. So, but right. It was a really simple process. And I think that trying to educate intended parents and future parents about that, most come into the process really fixated on, I want a pre-birth order, I want a pre-birth order. And I kind of say, okay, we'll do whatever you want, but let me tell you about my personal story. My son was born in Arizona. As soon as my son was born, we already had the paperwork ready to lodge to the courts. We lodged the paperwork to the courts. My surrogate, Evie, her name was removed because her name was on the original birth certificate and my name. And I think that's the key there is that so many families, they just don't want anyone else's name ever on that birth certificate. But
right.
Speaking from experience, it was the most simple process and it only cost a few thousand dollars more, the legal costs, to have my surrogate's name removed from the birth certificate. Right. And then it was within a couple of weeks that I was issued with a subsequent birth certificate, basically placed my ex-partner's name on the birth certificate.
And he's not involved anymore.
Now it's only mine.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's so another now process and another conversation for 2026 yeah, podcast. Into that.
That's the next one. This is beautiful and amazing. And I'm so glad you came and told your story and
yeah.
Keep on doing the good work. Keep going with it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jamie. I really appreciate it. To anyone out there who's, you know, wants more information on surrogacy and egg donation, just go to our site, newgenfamilies.com, and I'd love to have a chat with anyone.
Yeah, and everything will be in the show notes, and we'll talk to a surrogate or something of yours.
Amazing,
some new stuff. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jamie.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it, and if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.